Hi, this is John Stone Street, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, which you can find online at breakpoint.org. The Colson Center is pleased to support listening in. Enjoy the program.
I'm Warren Smith, and today you're listening in on my conversation with author and podcaster Barnabas Piper.
Because I used to be arrogant, and I mean, I think in my heart I still battle pride. I think everybody does in one way or another, but up through college into my early mid-20s, I fell much more on the dogmatic side, so I was so certain of what I believed that nobody could tell me otherwise, but it was not a deeply rooted faith, and so I hit a crisis of faith in my mid-20s because when there's not a deeply rooted faith and an identity in Christ where there's that sort of vibrant spiritual life that really defines who a person is, there's a lot of room for sin.
Barnabas Piper is likely well known to many world readers. He was a regular contributor to the World website for years. He's also the son of well-known pastor and occasional world contributor John Piper. In fact, it was in his role as a PK, or preacher's kid, that Barnabas Piper wrote his first book, The Pastor's Kid, Finding Your Own Faith and Identity. Barnabas Piper has gone on to have a robust writing and speaking career himself. His latest book is The Curious Christian, How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. Barnabas Piper works and lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and works for Lifeway Christian Resources. I had this conversation with Barnabas at the annual meeting of the National Religious Broadcasters in Orlando, Florida. Well, Barnabas Piper, first of all, welcome to the program. It's great to be with you. You've written for all kinds of places, including the World website time to time. And so I've, you know, read your stuff and know your stuff. And I want to start, rather than talk about your latest book, which we might get to, you know, later, what I would really more like to do is just to kind of talk about the trajectory of your life and sort of the evolution of your theology. I mean, you know, I may as well sort of, you know, get it on the table right now. You're John Piper's son. A lot of people know who John Piper is. A lot of people know who preacher's kids are, too, and they don't like them, or they love them, or they're...
Or they make assumptions about them.
They make assumptions about them, and some of those assumptions turn out to be true, and some of them not.
We do our best to live up to some of those, yeah.
Well, and I've even known some preacher's kids. Chuck Swindoll's son, for example, Chuck Swindoll Jr., he doesn't like to go by... He goes by a different name, so that, you know, that even though he's, you know, he's in ministry, and but you've not run from that.
Not recently, no. I would say that it's... I've lived in the same sort of evangelical world as my dad pretty much, you know, from the get-go. So once I was able to start making decisions about what I did with my own life, I still stayed in that world. So I went to the same college he did. I went to Wheaton College and then got into Christian publishing and have been in that world. So sort of the Christian nonprofit, Christian publishing world for the last several years, which means I live... in some sense in his shadow. He casts a big shadow by no choice of his own. And so, yeah, there's a certain level of expectation that comes with that and an awareness. And then when you have a weird name like Barnabas, people are like, Barnabas, is that, are you that guy? Because there's not very many of us floating around. So, yeah, there's no escaping it for me. And so the challenge for me over the last several years, that several, like being 8 to 10 years really, has been learning how to really find my own footing as a writer, as a believer, I mean, just my own faith, and then in an industry where people know him, have expectations, and so being able to just sort of be myself in that way. And there's two temptations. One is to sort of make every decision I make according to what he would want, and the other is to make every decision I make according to what he wouldn't want, you know, to sort of swing the pendulum. And both of those are pretty unhealthy. So finding that middle ground of who am I in Christ, who am I in terms of what gifts God's given me and those kinds of things. And that's, I'd say that in terms of, you know, you use the phrase evolution of my theology and things like that, that's it right there, is trying to figure out what are the uniquenesses in that space?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the other things that I've always been impressed with about you, Barnabas, as I've read your stuff over the years, is that you are a young man who has a mature sense of what he believes without being arrogant. I mean, there's a certain, at least that's my perception. I mean, I hope not. You know, you only and God knows your heart. I mean, but I find, again, I'm going to show my chronological chauvinism here, you know, but when I say a lot of times I look at a lot of young men, Christian young men, committed young men, and they are either still kind of working out some really important stuff. I mean, obviously, we're all working on a lot of stuff for our entire lives. But I find it disconcerting that a lot of young people raised in the church and ought to know better are still working out essential aspects of the faith, stuff that should be settled by now in their lives. Or they're on the other extreme where they're so dogmatic, they're so legalistic, that you kind of know that they're headed for a crisis at some point, that there's no way that they really believe that stuff, but that they heard some speaker or some writer that they admire say it, and they're mimicking it, they're parroting it, but it's not really something that they have processed and really come to believe themselves. You are at neither extreme from my point of view, and I admire that about you, and I'm just wondering how you got there.
Because I used to be arrogant, and I mean, I think in my heart I still battle pride. I think everybody does in one way or another, but up through college into my early mid-20s, I fell much more on the dogmatic side. So I was so certain of what I believed that nobody could tell me otherwise, but it was not a deeply rooted faith. And so I hit a crisis of faith in my mid-20s, because when there's not a deeply rooted faith and an identity in Christ, where there's that sort of vibrant spiritual life that really defines who a person is, there's a lot of room for sin. And so I got myself fired from a job and went through this crisis where it was very much I know what I'm supposed to believe, but what do I actually believe? And that was kind of the set of questions that I had to sort through. So theological questions and biblical questions. And it was not the kind of crisis of faith where I was wondering, is there a God or something like that? It was what do I believe about God? Is anything that I have claimed to believe about God not true? You know, and so through that, I was able to sort of draw out, like you said, the essentials, those things that go, okay, these are the defining aspects of faith. And these other things are more peripheral, and you sort of be able to see the gradation of these are the core things, ranging out to these are the things that don't matter at all, and then everywhere in between. And so through that, I also just learned a lot about my own need for grace. And if you have an understanding of your own need for grace, there's very little room for arrogance, because by definition, needing grace means you have nothing to be proud of. And so that's something that I have to keep going back to, because it's very easy. I'm a very opinionated person who likes to state things very bluntly, which those go hand in hand with arrogance. But theologically speaking, that was a lot of the process of getting me to the place of knowing what I believe, but being able to flex and bend a little bit. Because one of the things you talked about that makes me nervous for those people who are dogmatic is that if something is incredibly rigid, there's only one thing. It'll either stand strong or it will shatter. There are no other options.
No bending.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the ability to bend with the crises of life or those periods of doubt. So, but a bend without breaking, because there is an anchor in Christ, in faith, has been a thing that I think I've been growing in, and I hope kind of defines my own belief, but then also kind of how I write and what I share with others.
Well, let me back you up just a little bit. You talked about that sort of that crisis in your mid-late 20s. It was you said you fired for a job. Was that it, getting fired from the job, or were there other things associated with that?
That was the breaking point. And it, you know, there just sort of in the series leading up to that where I'd say my heart was sort of drying up. So outwardly, very dogmatic, very rigid, inwardly, pretty hollow, faith-wise. And the firing was from a Christian publishing company run by great people who I had great respect for, and a job that I was doing very well at. And so what it did was it essentially just took away all the trappings of faith, because now I'm no longer serving at a church at that point. I had been volunteering at a church. I'm no longer working at a Christian company. And there's just sort of this, I don't have any facade any longer at that point. And so it was me broken down to who am I? And who is God? And what do I believe about Christ? And those were the questions that needed to be sorted through. So that was, I would say that was a hinge moment. It wasn't that I realized it only at that point, but that was just sort of the thing that stripped away all of the trappings.
Well, what helped you through that time? What did you fall back on, or who or what came to your aid?
Yes. Oh, and yeah, I was definitely not alone in that. There was two or three men from the church I was at the time who they more or less were assigned to me, but I think they self-assigned. So they chose to walk with me for at least 12 months, maybe longer, just meeting weekly for everything from discipleship questions to sometimes they would assign me things like, you need to go read. One of them said, for example, you need to start reading the Gospels. So start with Matthew and just start working through. You need to try to set aside all the things you think you know about Christ, because you're overeducated and underconnected, and see if you can meet Jesus again. And so, and journal through this process. And it was when I got halfway through Mark that I, Jesus became much more alive to me. And it was the story of the father bringing his son to his demon possessed son to Jesus. And he says, you know, can you help me? And Jesus says, I can, if you believe. And the father's response is, I believe, help my unbelief. And that verse was sort of the spark that showed me what it means to be a person of conviction, but also be a person who struggles and has questions and has that flex in my faith. And I saw that happened in the presence of Jesus, and Jesus responded to that. And so there was it was that, but it was these men walking me to that place and then walking me through that place. And then I had an abundance of friends around me who just were regularly praying for me, encouraging me. My own parents were very supportive. I mean, I lived several states away, but regularly talking and praying and things like that. So I was in a community of people who were investing in my spiritual well-being throughout all that time.
You're listening in on my conversation with Barnabas Piper. His latest book is The Curious Christian, How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. He's also the co-host of the popular Happy Rant podcast, as well as the podcast Five Leadership Questions. I'm Warren Smith, more with Barnabas Piper when we return.
Hi, I'm John Stone Street, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. Don't forget to mark your calendars now for the Colson Center's Wilberforce Weekend, which will take place May 19th through 21st of 2017. Speakers this year include Ravi Zacharias, Oz Guinness, and Rod Dreher. For more information, go to breakpoint.org and click on Wilberforce Weekend at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Warren Smith, and today you're listening in on my conversation with Barnabas Piper as we explore the ideas in his new book, The Curious Christian, How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. Let's get right back to our conversation. You know, you said something just a moment ago, Barnabas, that I wanted to ask you to say a little bit more about. You said you were overeducated but underconnected. And I know in part what you meant there was that you were educated in theology and in doctrine, but maybe underconnected to Jesus, to the source of that. But it also brought to mind for me kind of a symptom of millennials these days, where they are, but in some ways just the opposite. They're overconnected, not to God, but through social media, there's this sort of this intricate web of superficial connections that millennials tend to find themselves in at all times. You know, you take away their cell phone and you almost expect them to shake, their hands to start shaking, but undereducated, especially undereducated in doctrine and theology. They might, in some cases, they've even been going to church for, 25 years, and they still don't really understand the essentials of the faith. Again, is this an example of my chronological chauvinism showing through here, or do you find that to be a symptom of your generation?
I think every generation has its unique set of failures as it comes to church and faith. I think if you trace generations back, you can find great strengths and great weaknesses. I mean, liberal theology was born 80, 90 years ago, and that's the, it's the builder generation. And boomers had their issues theologically and in how they did church and I would say in disconnecting relationally in a lot of ways. If my generation is undereducated theologically, who was responsible for educating us.
Right. I get that.
So, yeah. I mean, it's, and I'm not saying this to cast blame, but just to talk about the sort of the delicate nature of generational failures.
I appreciate that. You're not saying that to cast blame, but, you know, if my kids, for example, are not educated theologically, that's nobody's fault but mine. And it also creates a certain dynamic, too. I think a lot of the, you know, younger generation, they look to their parents, whether they maybe intentionally or consciously know it or not. And I think there's a part of them that says, hey, you didn't serve me well as parents. And so, again, I'm not trying to, you know, cast blame on the younger generation either, because I do see and feel in my bones, really, what you have said loud and clearly, that, you know, those of us who are older have to be the men and women that the younger generation want to look up to, and they need reasons to look up to us.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent now, I feel that strongly, because I mean, I regularly wonder what my daughters will react to and say. I don't want to be like my parents' generation in that, but I want to be this way. And so, I mean, the pendulum swings repeatedly. And so I think in the church, I would agree with your assessment of millennials. I don't know that there's a great amount of value in trying to put a finger on, you know, whose fault is that or why did that happen. But I would say that there's a dearth of biblical education, just in terms of basic understanding of what does the Bible say about what, which is why people can say outlandish things and people will just assume that it's true, because they've never read 80% of the Bible. So there's not a sense of that. And then when it comes to theological foundations, there's these core beliefs of what does it mean to be a believer in Christ. Those things are held very loosely because dogmatism is a thing that we react negatively to. And so finding that balance between having core convictions but not being a dogmatic jerk is a challenge for a millennial, because we grew up in a postmodern society. We grew up in a society where truth is very relativized, and theology and doctrine were not taught in a way that was rich and meaningful. It was more dogmatic and systematic. So believe this, not that, right, wrong. And so there wasn't a lot of life in it. And so that's part of what I meant by being educated but not connected, where I could have argued any side of any theological issue. I still probably could. But I find no life in that. Life is in the person and work of Jesus Christ and the connection to that. And so that is where I'd like to say my goal is to help close that gap, to say here are some convictional statements, but in a relatable connection type of way to life, to the soul, to the heart, to some context.
Let's pivot just a little bit, if we could, in our conversation and talk about your latest book. Tell me about that book.
Yeah, so my latest book, it comes out tomorrow from the time we are recording this. It's called The Curious Christian. The goal behind it is to look at how intentional curiosity, so a pursuit of truth, leads us into a deeper and richer life in both spiritually, so what we were talking about, this deep exploration and connection to Christ and to God, but then through that into God's creation, to the cultures of the world, to all of the things that bear God's fingerprints. The idea behind it being that we are tasked with being image bearers of God. That is, you know, right there in Genesis from the get-go, that we are image bearers of God, but we are these finite fallen human beings who are tasked with being an image bearer of an infinite and perfect God. So how does that work? Well, it doesn't work unless we are intentionally pursuing a greater understanding of who God is and a greater connection to who God is, and then seeing God's handiwork in the way that he wants us to see it across the world and across cultures.
Well, you know, I resonate, Barnabas, deeply with that idea as a writer myself and as a journalist. I used to teach journalism, and I would tell my students on the first day of class, I was teaching upper division college students, that I can teach you grammar, I can teach you how to do an interview, I can teach you how to write a lead for...
But you could teach some of them grammar, let's be honest.
Well, you know, whatever, it's a teachable skill. But I said, the one thing that I cannot teach you is curiosity. And I said, the good news is that I believe that if you're a human being, you were born with it. And I think part of the reason for that is because of Genesis chapter 2. When God told Adam to name the animals, he brought the animals to Adam, and Adam looked at those animals. And there was a certain kind of interaction that was happening there. What is the nature of this animal? What is the dogness of the dog, so to speak?
Yeah.
So I love that idea of curiosity, and I'm so glad that you're writing about it, because I think that the world is not short of wonders, but it is short of wonder, and that
having a certain curiosity and a sense of wonderment about the world is kind of lost on us these days.
You said we are all born with it as humans, and I think so many things about life tend to wring it out of us as we get older. School wrings it out of us because school gets narrower and narrower the older we get. You know, you end up going to college for a job. You know, I want to study marketing, or I want to study business or theology, and you ignore everything else in the world. Just social pressures. I have a daughter who's heading into middle school next year, and pressure to be cool makes curiosity kind of you set that aside because asking questions isn't cool, wonder isn't cool, and we have the same pressures as adults. So there's those aspects, but then just we look for the easiest route forward, and the easiest route is not exploration. It's not wondering. It's not connecting to new things and trying new things and meeting new people, all of which are ways to see God's work in the world. And so, yeah, I think we start out with it because every child is just defined by curiosity. If you have children or if you know children, you know that to be the case. And then we lose it. We lose something profound when that happens because we lose the ability to connect with others and we lose the ability to see and wonder about truth. And I want to say for listeners that the idea of having a sense of wonder is not like walking around going, wow, all the time. It's just noticing. I mean, at the very basic level, it's just observing and noticing the things in the world that you've never noticed before, and then kind of filing it away and just taking note of it.
Yeah, you know, it's partly because I struggled with my vocation. I think all people struggle with, what am I going to do when I grow up, that kind of thing. I've sort of made it a study of finding out, people that are great at something, how did they discover that gift? And I know I talk to engineers, and sometimes they'll say, well, I took apart my mom's toaster. And I know for me as a writer, I would read a Flannery O'Connor short story or a William Faulkner short story or novel, and I would say, how did he do that, or how did she do that? And so sort of taking it apart and trying to figure that out. To me, that's a part of what wonder is. It's just trying to looking at the world and, kind of seeing the fingerprints of God in that world, how and why and what and for what purpose.
And what I love about what you just said is that you talked about an engineer and a toaster, and you talked about a Flannery O'Connor story, and those are vastly different. And so that's one of the defining aspects of curiosity, is that it can point in any direction. It can point in an artistic direction or a mechanical direction or a mathematical direction or an introverted or extroverted direction. So, I mean, this is not a thing that's defined by personal traits. It is inherent to us because it's part of being an image bearer. And how do we bear God's image in the unique way that he made us? And so that's the purpose of curiosity ultimately. And so for me, you talked about Flannery O'Connor. For me, it was reading C.S. Lewis and going, how does he think like that? The thinking of C.S. Lewis, and then as I've gotten into G.K. Chesterton and those two guys especially, and just going, they were fun, they were brilliant, they were analytical, but they could tell a story and they could tell a joke. I'm like, I want to be able to do all those things. And those are the things, like, sort of dissecting their writing, that had that same sort of light bulb kind of impact on me. And that's not prescriptive to anybody, because somebody else is going to find the same thing in hearing, an Eric Clapton guitar solo, and that's no less meaningful. That's just the way that they are wired and the way God pointed them.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, Barnabas, what do you want people to come away from the book? What do you want them to think or say or do as that would be different maybe in their lives as a result of having read your book?
I think for those of us who are in the more conservative evangelical world, which I think would comprise it, you and I and probably most of the listeners, I want to give people a sense of permission to explore more deeply and more widely, starting into who God is, but then expanding that out into the world, because I think we live with a sense of sort of guilt and fear, and curiosity is squashed by those things. So a sense of permission, but then also, yeah, a sense of wonder. So I hope if people read it, they will look at this and go, oh, wow, there are both very easy ways to be curious that start very close to home. So conversations with family, conversations with neighbors, reading a different sort of book, whatever it is, and seeing the snowball effect of that, of their growing sense of wonder, because one of the best things about curiosity is that it builds on itself. Every time you discover something, you discover something else, and they just tend to lead to something else. And then it gives you a greater sense of passion and desire for that pursuit of truth and the observation of what God is doing.
You're listening in on a conversation I had recently with Barnabas Piper. We're discussing, among other things, his new book, The Curious Christian, How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. I'm Warren Smith, and we'll have a final segment with Barnabas Piper when we return.
Hi, I'm John Stonestreet, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. You can help us carry on the legacy of Chuck Colson by becoming a Colson Fellow. To find out more about this intensive one-year deep dive program into Christian Worldview, go to breakpoint.org and click on Colson Fellows at the top of the page.
You're listening in on a conversation I had recently with author and podcaster Barnabas Piper. We had this conversation at the annual convention of the National Religious Broadcasters, where Barnabas debuted his new book, The Curious Christian, How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life, and where he was a speaker, speaking on how to do podcasting in an effective way in this digital age. Barnabas, I'd like to pivot again and maybe just ask you some kind of goofy, random, lightning round type questions. One is, what are you reading these days? What's sort of nourishing your mind and heart these days?
I'm usually reading multiple books at a time because I never know what I'm going to be in the mood for or have the energy for. So I'm reading a book called The Big Short by Michael Lewis, who, for my money, is probably the best nonfiction sort of storyteller.
I completely agree with that.
He's brilliant. So this is about the collapse of the housing and financial industry in leading up to 2008.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie, by the way?
I have, and I wanted to read the book first because I like to do that because the book's always better than the movie.
Yeah. In this case, I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
The movie's quite good.
Oh,
good.
Now I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
I'm reading Ragamuffin Gospel by Brennan Manning, which it took...
It's old school, man.
But it took 100 recommendations for me to pick it up, and 85 pages in, I'm not disappointed. He has a view of grace that is rich. I am reading, The Originals by Adam Grant. It's just looking at where our original ideas come from, what sets apart original thinkers and creators, and how do original ideas become successful? So it's sort of a business book, but a little bit of a pop psychology book as well. He's an excellent writer as well. Those are the three that come to mind right now. There's two or three others, but I'm blanking on them because I just started.
Well, I can't resist asking just because of where our conversation went a little bit ago. Have you read Andy Crouch's book, Culture Making?
I've read all of Andy Crouch's books because he is one of my favorite thinkers there right now. Culture Making is fantastic. His book, Strong and Weak, the little one, is I might like it even more. Just the thing that I appreciate about him so much is the way that he can create a paradigm that allows us to just think better about life and see things differently. He's brilliant.
Well, he's also an artist as well. Mm-hmm. He's a great musician and a great storyteller.
Yes.
And so I was just wondering if there might have been some resonance there. What about in terms of TV and movies? Do you have any preference? And music? Do you have any preferences there?
Well, musically, I always fall back to jazz. If I don't know what else to listen to, I go back to Oscar Peterson and Stan Getz and Miles Davis and Cannonball Adderley. And there's a whole list, but that is my fallback for when I'm writing or just relaxing or whatever. I like hip hop, so there's a record label called Humble Beast it's a Christian hip hop label. It's all sort of underground, very lyrically and poetically driven hip hop. It's culturally and theologically very rich, and love what they do. So some of their artists are Propaganda, and there's a group called Beautiful Eulogy, and then Show Baraka, and they're brilliant.
Well, I know Propaganda, and your dad was actually one of the guys that helped put Lecrae on the map with Reach Records. I'm just wondering if you know those guys.
So I work at Lifeway Christian Resources, and we published Lecrae's book last year, and been familiar with them for a long time. Stylistically, I kind of prefer the other style
of
hip hop more, but the work that they do, they're phenomenal artists.
And
Triple E and that whole collection of artists, they're really, really good. In terms of movies, I saw Manchester by the Sea a couple months ago, and it was a brilliantly done movie. It's dark and it's depressing, but I think it's dark and depressing in just the right way, sort of an honest look at grief and pain. I thought it was really, really well done. I thought La La Land was brilliant in an entirely different way. So sort of this, I mean, just the artistic risks they took in that movie were amazing. You don't see a lot of that come out of Hollywood these days. And then Fences, the one with
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, Denzel Washington.
Yep. August Wilson played in the movie.
And you could tell it was a play because it had sort of that claustrophobic feel to it,
a
little stagey
for my taste.
But the writing and the acting, especially Viola Davis's character, was so,
she won the
so
Academy
good.
Award for
and,
that. Yeah.
It's a hard one to recommend because it's just a kind of a dark, hard movie, but it was really, really brilliantly done too.
Yeah. Well, very good. Well, Barnabas, thank you so much for being on the program. It's been great to hang out with you for a few minutes, and all the best with the book.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. That brings to a close my conversation with Barnabas Piper. We had this conversation a few weeks ago at the annual meeting of the National Religious Broadcasters in Orlando, Florida. Barnabas's new book is The Curious Christian: How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. Barnabas writes regularly at the website The Blazing Center, as well as his own site, barnabaspiper.com. His podcasts include The Happy Rant and 5 Leadership Questions. You can search on the podcast titles to find them on iTunes. Listening In comes to you from World News Group online at WNG.org. Listening In is just one of the many benefits of World membership. To find out more about becoming a member of World, go to GetWorldNow.com. Our technical producer is Rich Rozzle. Production assistance comes from Michael Huckabee. Our executive producer is Nick Eicher. I'm your host, Warren Smith, and you've been listening in.